Hey, honey, did we just pass a Pitts S2? Gamma reports piston sales have fallen in half this year, and opponents of Panama City's new airport appear to be out of appeals. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, May 6th, 2009. You may have heard that airshow star Sean D. Tucker made a dead stick landing on the 101 freeway in California Sunday evening. You may even have heard that he ran out of gas. Well, as you might suspect, there's a little more to it than that. We'll be giving you the chance to hear Sean talk about it exclusively to ANN in today's Aero News special feature. More on that coming up. The General Aviation Manufacturers Association has released industry-wide first quarter sales numbers, and they're breathtaking in a bad way. Gamma says that in the first 3 months of 2009, deliveries of general aviation airplanes totaled 462 units. That's down 41.1% from the same period last year, with industry billings falling 18.2% to $4.34 billion. Among the numbers that really stick out, the piston segment fell by more than half, down 55.1% from last year. The only tracked category that was up was turboprops, and that was only 3.4% over last year. Gamma President Pete Bunce commented, quote, "We're dealing first and foremost with the severe negative effects of a worldwide economic downturn, but also with unwarranted criticism focused on the industry. The result has been the cancellation of orders for new airplanes and the loss of more than 15,000 high-paying jobs for American workers over the last several months. We will continue to work with governments around the world to recognize that general aviation can play a key role in propelling the economic recovery," unquote. You can find more of the numbers at www.gama.aero. Pete Bunce will be our guest tomorrow on the Aero News special feature. Florida airport obstructionists have lost a big one in the courts. The National Resources Defense Council, Defenders of Wildlife, and Friends of PFN challenged the FAA over its approval process for the new Panama City Bay County International Airport, which is already 55% completed at its new site in West Bay, Florida. The airport's scheduled to open in about a year. The Second Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals has ruled that the FAA acted properly under the terms of the National Environmental Policy Act when it approved the project being built on 4,000 donated acres of land. The ruling pretty much ends the legal gauntlet unless the opponents can somehow get the Supreme Court to hear an appeal. Airport Authority Vice Chairman Bill Kramer commented, quote, "We are focused on building a state-of-the-art facility that will be one of the greenest airports in the world. The court's ruling will provide a boost to our airline marketing and business recruitment efforts," unquote. The new airport was deemed necessary to serve the growing demand for airline service to the county and the surrounding area. The construction is part of Florida's largest regional planning initiative ever. The West Bay Sector Plan totals 75,000 acres, more than half of which will be conservation land. Hey, here's a bit of calendar shock for you. The FAA's Notice to Airmen for EAA Air Venture Oshkosh 2009 has been published. Among changes this year is the period covered. It's in effect until noon September 3rd, the day after the event ends. Other changes affect both IFR and VFR arrivals. Make sure you download the NOTAM if you're flying in. It's required reading, and it's available online at airventure.org. Up next on ANN, Amavest announces an SJ-30 milestone. NTSB issues a prelim on Saturday's firebomber crash in Utah. And STS-125 will one day be available in 3D. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 6th. I'm Paul Plack. The labored journey of the highly anticipated Sinoswaringen SJ-30 business jet, from initial development to routine customer deliveries, is showing signs of emerging from more than a dozen years of political and financial obstacles. With the balking Taiwanese government investors out of the picture, and the subprime-ravaged ACQ Capital having sold out to a Dubai group, the company is now known as Emivest, and tells ANN it has just issued the first single-pilot type rating for the jet since its takeover. Deborah Draheim, whose day job is flying CRJs for a regional airline, is also a pilot for a private company poised to take imminent delivery of SJ-30 serial number 8. Of her new ride, she says, quote, "I really enjoy flying the SJ-30. It's a swift and agile jet. I was surprised to see how easy it was to fly and am impressed with its speed, fuel efficiency, and capability. I look forward to flying serial number 008 when the company takes delivery this summer," unquote. Lots of other pilots are waiting for that same thrill. The SJ-30 has a range of 2,500 nautical miles and cruises at 486 knots. It can operate to 49,000 feet and maintain sea-level cabin pressure to 41,000 feet. The National Transportation Safety Board has issued a preliminary report on the apparent controlled flight into terrain of a Neptune P-2V fire bomber on April 25th near Stockton Pass in Utah's Ochre Mountains. Three crew members died when their flight from Missoula, Montana to Alamogordo, New Mexico ended suddenly and violently on the mountainside. The NTSB interviewed two witnesses near the scene who reported hearing the plane pass at what sounded like low altitude, but invisible in heavy fog. There was nothing which sounded like aircraft trouble, just the sound of impact seconds after it passed their position. A formal report on probable cause is expected from the board in about a year. If you've seen any of the IMAX footage NASA has shot during space missions, you know it's such an immersive experience you almost feel weightless just watching it. Well, now NASA, IMAX, and Warner Brothers have announced the large 3D format will be along for the ride to document mission STS-125 as the crew of Atlantis makes the shuttle program's final visit to the Hubble Space Telescope. That launch is scheduled for Monday. The IMAX 3D camera made its first voyage into space in 2001 for the production of Space Station 3D. The Hubble 3D film will mark the first venture into space for Warner Brothers. Still ahead, Rockwell Collins gets to continue developing damage tolerance technology. Raytheon tests the Killer Bee UAV in a simulated sea mission. And what can a veteran airshow performer learn from an unrehearsed dead stick landing? You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800 for Cessna.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, May 6th. I'm Paul Plack. Rockwell Collins has picked up a third-phase DARPA contract to develop technology it says will allow an unmanned scale model F-18 to demonstrate completely autonomous takeoff, recovery from extreme damage and failure, and autonomous landing. The technology has applications in both manned and unmanned systems. Over a period of 15 months, Rockwell will be expected to demonstrate its full damage tolerance and advanced controls capabilities on both a scale F-18 and a current model unmanned aerial system, including recovery of control and safe autonomous landing following the failure of control surfaces and wing parts and the loss of the empennage. In the final flight test for Phase 2 in April of last year, the test aircraft intentionally ejected 60% of one wing, cycled its adaptive controls off and on, and landed safely. Raytheon says its Killer Bee UAS has demonstrated that it can be recovered from a net on a moving platform, simulating an at-sea recovery. During the land-based test, Killer Bee was recovered in a net mounted on a rapidly moving truck, demonstrating that the guidance system enables aircraft recovery from platforms moving at speeds similar to a naval vessel. Bob Francois, Raytheon Missile Systems Advanced Programs VP, says the craft has wide applications. Quote, Killer Bee's minimal footprint ensures our ability to integrate the system onto a wide variety of U.S. Navy ships, unquote. The Killer Bee name and technology was just acquired by Raytheon from Northrop Grumman, in part to provide Raytheon with an entry in the U.S. Navy and Marine Corps' small tactical UAS and Tier 2 competition. And finally today, as I mentioned at the top of this Aero briefing, Sean D. Tucker had an interesting afternoon on Sunday. Motorists on California's 101 freeway near King City got an impromptu air show as Tucker's bright red, highly modified Pitts S2S biplane made a landing in traffic lanes after a fuel problem. Sean says he got a low fuel warning and two burps from the engine during a photo shoot and quickly determined that getting the plane on the ground quickly and safely was a much better idea than risking flying over populated areas in the hopes of making a runway before the fuel was completely exhausted. The problem was later traced to an issue with calibration of a fuel totalizer. Once the plane was refueled, California Highway Patrol blocked traffic long enough for a takeoff, and the event was over. The most interesting thing about this story is that even after all his years and all he's seen from every possible angle, Sean says he learned two things from this experience. Hear what they are in Jim Campbell's exclusive interview with Sean about the incident in today's Aero News special feature. That's the latest from Aero News. If you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.